And welcome back to the program. You're listening to Sacred Space here on CJUM 101.5 FM out of Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. We're sitting here talking with Michael Tsarian. He is metavision. Oh, that's interesting. I just created a new thing for you. Metavisionary. A metavisionary.
A good one.
Yeah. One of the things that was talked about throughout their Horizon project, I thought was kind of was time. And for me, it's always a thing I question, because especially now, because it really seems to me that time is just moving at an exponential rate these days. It just 10, 15 years ago, it was not the same as it is now. So I got a couple of questions here. Number one, time, what is it? And number two, is it a man-made phenomena?
Well, same answer. Answers both, and the answer is yes, it is man-made. It's nothing more than a form of consciousness, actually. And science is on the verge of proving this, as a matter of fact, that just as they've noticed that on the quantum level, matter is, so-called matter, that is affected by consciousness. In brief, we know that the quantum scientists have proven that the very act of looking or observing something changes what you observe on the quantum level, ergo, that in one fell swoop confirms what mystics had been saying from the dawn of time, that matter, even if you want to think of it as something separate, which already is a totally bogus concept, but even given that you're now seeing matter as a separate entity than consciousness, well, they've come full circle to finding out that consciousness affects matter. Maybe they got to go to, you know, the next step to find out that consciousness is matter. It's just two stupid words for this. For exactly the same thing, you know what I mean? We've been talking about is that look how primitive man is. Mm-hmm. They have not worked this out yet, that he and the earth and he and the universe and he and the matter of the universe, which is another utterly preposterous name that he's given to something in order to externalize it. I mean, man just loves trying to prove he's exclusive in the areas where he shouldn't be exclusive, and he goes to the greatest length to be a slave in the areas in which he is, you know, should not be a slave. It's so upside down, topsy turvy. It's almost hard to, you'd have to, you know, laugh if it wasn't so bloody tragic. But the idea is that time itself is also an aspect of consciousness. Time itself is not external to us at all, and ergo, this speeding up phenomena that people are starting to notice is all articulated again to consciousness. Or let's just say, when I say consciousness, I mean the entire psyche, conscious and unconscious, because you always have to factor in the unconscious and all of these questions.
You have to. That's what Jung was talking about, the collective consciousness and the collective unconsciousness.
Yes. So we see a projection of reality that is projected from our worldview, you know. Now, one of the greatest experts on the subject of time from a philosophical point of view was a philosopher from France called Henri Bergson. And his work is very, very important. It's been very underrated. But he, in short, was an expert on time. And he came up with a term called Elan Vital. And he said that time is almost the plasma of God. It's almost like that time is almost, it's not negative. It's not something, because a lot of cultures you see, especially the Vedic culture, the word that represents time in Vedic teachings in Hindi is Kal. And Kal means negative. It implies something negative. In fact, in many Eastern traditions, time is an extension of the demiurge or the Luciferian or satanic principle. It's basically the thing that entraps the soul. And you'll keep hearing this refrain that man has fallen into matter, you know, and that a spirit has fallen into matter, and the spirit is entrapped in time, you know. And, of course, they call it Chirasi, the wheel of karma. There's all these different Eastern takes on time, and most of it's very negative, like time is some sort of entrapment. You know, that there's this eternal realm over there, and you're meant to get to it by signing us constant checks, making us rich, and doing a lot of puja and all sorts of weird sadomasochistic, practices, etc. And when we feel you're good enough, we'll pat you on the head and tell you that you're eternal now, and Krishna loves you just in exactly the same way as we're handed that lie over here. But basically, their ideology and philosophy is that time is something negative. Now, my thinking is that as soon as you are preached that something is negative, or as soon as you embody the idea that something is negative, it becomes negative.
You make it
and so. Your relationship to it is then a feedback loop. So you are entrapped. You're entrapped not because the thing is negative, but because you believe it's negative. Your idea has become, you know, corrupted. So Bergson cut through a lot of this with his concept of the élan vital, showing that, in fact, time is something so much more than that. It's actually the theater in which man discovers all the principles about himself. Time is the allowance of the creator, let's say. It's the plasma of the mother in which you work. It's the theater of time in which you become who you are, in which you do all the discovery of the self, in which you rise to higher states, in which you love, in which you, you know, have the euphoria and the ecstasies and so on. You're able to do that because you live in what the pleroma of God. And the pleroma of God, the embryonic fluid, the amniotic fluid, is time. And so when you start seeing time in this way, you totally change your attitude towards it and no longer see it as some sort of karmic thing or some sort of imprisonment of time being the extension of yourself or the extension of your spirit.
So time is the stage that we act on.
That's right. It's almost like time is your facilitator. You're given this, and by the word reversed is emit, like the Indian word amit, which means endless, timeless, timeless, actually. The word reversed, like emit or amat, actually means the boundless. So in many ways, there's a hint of that. If you go back to the old tantric religions of India, which were much, much different than all this patristic nonsense that came later, the original tantric Sufi-based teachings had a totally different understanding of Maya, which is another sort of a word that connotes time or connotes entrapment. And so basically, in short, one would say this to refute the modern religions is, look, if matter is spirit, how can spirit fall into matter and be entrapped? How can spirit be entrapped by itself? Now, if you entertain the idea that there is this separation, you see, which all these monkeys always not only want to accept themselves, but they're going to preach it.
Yep.
They're going to write books about it and tell you all about it.
Yep.
They're going to indoctrinate you with this false thinking. And, of course, these monks and all the people who fall in it, they don't go and observe life themselves. They believe what the priest has told them, that you're trapped in this wheel, you can't get out of it unless you do all these crazy things, and you're a sinner and all the rest of it. You know, but nobody actually goes and observes it themselves. You know, do the flowers operate on this level? Do the clouds? You know, I mean, does the rain, do the lakes worry about all of this? You know, there's a whole other process going on outside of us, which is holarchic, which utterly divorces you from this nonsensical, adversarial concept of time. And even in the very words, the twisted, you know, Sanskrit words, the connotations that were put on those representing time are very, very negative. And, of course, once you believe it, once you buy into it, well, that's it. That becomes the feedback loop. That is your chains, into which you do literally believe that time is an adversary. And you start to then think of all of these things as external to you. But my point is that, look, if everything is spirit, if everything is an extension of spirit, there is no such thing as, you know, Satan or the devil and all of his nonsense, then spirit is everything and everywhere. Mm-hmm. And just like you asked the question about what is the now, well, the now is the eternal now. So even if you study the past, you're still doing it in the now.
Yeah, good point.
If I'm studying the past, but it implies I'm doing it now, so there's no reason really why it abnegates the idea of the nowness. The nowness is an all-encompassing attitude of life. It's like the Fool card so beautifully shows this in the Tarot. Fool stands on the edge. But what is he standing on the edge of? Well, he and the entire universe of which he is a part, that means every single cell, every single atom, ages at exactly the same moment. Creation, nature, the atoms of the world are older than your physical life, obviously, because if you're 30, obviously the universe, the history of the world, goes back further than your individual life. But here's the miracle. Although the world and the earth and the rocks and the minerals and even the life forms, the vegetable life forms, may be older than you, stretching back past your birth, they are equally as young as you all move into the future. And the Fool card shows this, that every atom that makes up a human body, and every atom that makes up a star, and every atom that makes up anything, evolves into the so-called future at exactly the same instant, meaning that you are coterminous, contemporary, as you move into the now, as you move into the so-called future. That's why it's a precipice there, that each and every single atom that exists is fresh and moves into the future instantaneously, contemporaneously. That's about as egalitarian as you can get. Now, the man who is carrying a lot of baggage around, or as I say, these negative attitudes towards time, he is self-imprisoned in the past, and therefore he is out of sync with this movement. In other words, to make it more simple, his thinking is not fresh and new. So a person whose thinking, whose consciousness, whose attitude is utterly decrepit, he is then going to want all experiences that come his way to be fresh and new. Turn me on. I'm externally driven. I'm outer directed. Turn me on. When's the latest thing coming along? When's the next stimuli to turn me on? Well, you've got a big system out there, Big Brother, who's just going, delightful. We're so glad to hear you say that, because that's our job. We are the monopoly that's going to do that. We're so happy to hear you say from your emptiness that we have an entire circus out here to turn you on, because the person is decrepit inside. So the idea is that the man who's waiting for every experience to be fresh and new to give him, you know, some sort of a injection of adrenaline because he's morbid, is a completely different creature, a completely different animal than the man who is thinking is fresh and new. So he doesn't necessarily require experience to be fresh and new, because his world is fresh and new. And so the fool card has always been connected with the universal child. Many people have said it's the child spirit, and they're right. It's spirit. It's the youngness that you find in many elderly people. You know, I find it in some of the elders that I've encountered. Jesus, you know, they're so young in their soul and their spirit, and this really matters. You know,
for me, that's one of the best things that I feel good about is when I look at elderly people and they have that glint in their eye and a smile on their face. It's amazing what that does to me. Just in the sense of, you know, it's so beautiful to see that, because it's so often that we don't anymore. And it's
exactly
nice.
And you know, it's getting you can, you know, I don't even want to get into this whole thing about how elderly people are treated in America.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not that much better in Europe, but it's certainly a lot better. You know, let's not even get into that. But exactly, this whole other treatment uproots you, so that families are broken up and young people don't have the connection that they should have with the elders. Many of the elders are as dumbass as everybody else anyway. You know, so you don't meet too many wise ones. And unfortunately, this is a huge problem. It probably contributes massively, in fact, to some of the problems that we're facing in our world.
Yep.
And even the way the media sort of portrays the elderly person is just like an idiot, you know. I mean, it's not too healthy the way it's depicted. You know, it's just a whole issue with that.
Yeah. This is really becoming clear to me as to why time was so important to the ancients, because they understood what we're lacking, what we don't understand about it.
Yeah,
but
they understood that the individual man was a locus point. But he was the potentiality.
Yeah,
he was a product of all that had been, and they tried to teach people this by, you know, making them have a very strong sense of rites of passage was so crucial, so that you became aware of the legacy of the past. They were close to nature anyway, so I mean, the seasons, you're going to have a clear understanding of the past, the benefit of it anyway, because they were aware of how things grew. A tree leaves a ring for every year of its growth, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
A plant grows X amount high based on the past, you know. Everything is connected. So it's not like, it's almost, when you have a holarchic understanding as opposed to hierarchy, this is then when the past is not seen as a pathological thing. The way we see it now is, of course, it's the past that's distant from us, it's separate. And there is a chance then that a person could become regressed or overly obsessed with the past. But if your thinking is already holarchic, it's all the eternal now. The past is in the present, in fact. There is no such thing as a past, because just by you recalling it, you're bringing the past into the moment.
Yeah.
That has a downside, of course, but it also has an upside, you know. It's a very, very important question. It's, again, based on attitude. It's based on attitude. It's not good thinking about the past if your life is so meaningless now that the only place that you can run for some sense of, you know, invigorment is the past. You know, that's wrong. You can dip into it, you know, from a point of view of that you want to learn, like you're seeking for truth, or you want to admire the great people of the past, the great artists, and you want to study their life because their life is your life. The world they lived in shaped them, and the world you're living in shapes you. So it's part of you. Again, you take your reason with you. You don't abnegate your reason, leave it locked up, and then start dipping into all of these things in an obsessive way. You know, I mean, my mind always goes to that movie that was made with, what's his name? Who's the guy that acted Superman?
Christopher Reeve?
That's the one. He made a movie that's a really, really great film. It's Somewhere in Time.
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever heard of that film?
Yeah.
And this film, if you watch it from a psychological... I mean, it's an interesting story, just from a story point of view. But if anyone gets the movie and watches it from a psychological point of view, man, that really opens up. Because it's a story about regression, and also a thing called anima possession. Possession of the anima, which often, you know... I mean, I don't want to get into all that, but it's a very important film for showing a person can actually auto-hypnotize himself. The character auto-hypnotizes himself in order to go into the past because he wants to be with somebody that he's fallen in love with in the present.
Yeah.
He wills himself to... And this is such a fantastic movie from a psychological point of view because guess what happens? He actually succeeds, you know, and he does this. Now, do you remember the movie Papillon?
Oh, yeah, that was a good one, too, yeah.
Well, that was based on a true story of a guy that literally was locked up in solitary confinement, this French guy, who literally was a criminal, who spent, you know, 5 years or more in absolute solitary confinement in which you couldn't speak. It was silence, and it was pitch dark as well for many of those years. And this character's name I've forgotten right now, when he finally got released and he got back to France and he wrote a biography, he spoke about how he manipulated time with his consciousness. And it's one of the most fascinating things you've ever read about how this man literally created an analog life for himself. And in fact, it became more real than his living state, so that when he finally got released, it was more difficult for him to adjust to, you know, the life of the present, because he had made this virtual vivid world that was so immensely vivid. I mean, relationships and complex, you know, adventures that he was having and all of these kinds of things. In the darkness of his mind, he created an entire labyrinthine, real, tangible world, much, much more than the average imaginings would normally do, you see, or average daydreaming, which is pretty powerful in itself. Well, this guy had really gone into it and really evolved all of this sort of goings-on in his mind, and it took him a long time to get back into swing with, you know, what reality would be. And this opens up the, you know, so what was time doing in his mind? He had created time himself. He had created an entire analog form of time.
Wow.
Outside of the time of the outer world, which brings up this whole point that time is nothing more than a particular extension of consciousness. And so when we're living in time, the question arises, does a man need 100 years in order to feel alive? Or can he, every year, every moment, live with such depth that his cup is always overflowing, you see, with life? And that even if his life was brief, he's already lived to the fullest. Because I have a question, I've had this question all my life, since I first became aware of the phenomenon, that when Crazy Horse and when Sitting Bull and when Geronimo and when Nyko ride out on the plane and say, this is a good day to die, and they mean it, there isn't a shred of fear in these people, I want to know what makes that happen.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's loyalty, and I know it's anger, and I know it's belief, but there's something much greater than that that lets a man walk out onto a plane in front of his enemies and say, today is a good day to die. That man must be so enriched, so utterly full of life, that not one shred of emptiness exists in his being.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's the same things at Montségur in south of France, when the Cathars walk willingly into the flames, that not a single enemy soldier had to put them in the flames. They walked into it on their own accord. And we have many instances of this. You see, that we were asking a question here about what on earth could be, or William Wallace, when he was hung, drawn, and quartered, you know, by his enemies. There's something magnificent about a human being that has drunk so deeply of life that even nailed to a dungeon wall, or put through horrendous experiences, or ready to give up their mortality for principles. You see, an empty, existentially raped human being can't do that. And unfortunately, we are in the world today with people like that. I'm going to be very straight about it. We are living in a world in which people are not drinking deeply of life. They don't even know how to anymore.
Yeah.
They haven't even got the hardwiring. Maybe we've had so many wars that have wiped out so much of the pure blood that it's lunatic to even expect it.
Yeah, been dumbed down so much.
Possibly. There could be a whole question there.
Yeah.
That literally the purest blood of the world, sad to say. I mean, there has been people who've said that, and it has to be taken on board.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's just a simple genetic fact. But, you know, there's so many factors one has to look at here.
What comes to mind is how important intent really is. I mean, it always comes to the top of the list of just how important it is. But I mean, just more and more, it just speaks at me how important it is. And I mean, it's often a thing that I often have talked about where, you know, people talk. And Jake, I don't know if you ever saw the movie Jacob's Ladder.
Oh, I love that film. Yes,
yes,
indeed.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites. And for me, that's the whole thing about the whole heaven and hell thing. You know, it all depends on your intent and what your heart is. And it's the same being. It's the same thing. It just depends on where your heart is. If you go there in a positive way, that being will be an angel. And if you go there in a negative way, that being will be a demon. It just depends on what your intent is and where your heart is.
And I wish our education system trained people to examine that.
Yeah.
How important it is to teach a child by demonstration of how their attitudinal temperament affects the world that they know. I mean, writing prosperity books for 30-year-olds in the New Age spinner rack, okay, something's better than nothing, I guess. But we need to sort of pick up that slack a little earlier to try and show people how attitude affects your reality.
Yes.
You know, I mean, so the work of Krishnamurti and the work of, you know, Rudolf Steiner and more recent times Byron Katie, these are great teachers because that's what they're focusing on, attitude, consciousness, attitude, consciousness, attitude, consciousness. That, you know, without your attitude being aligned correctly and without you critiquing all the different forces that have got your psyche into a banjaxed state, you're not going to be able to find wholeness. You're going to take your own faulty thinking into everything that you're doing, and therefore you will be unfulfilled because your thinking has not been corrected.
Yep.
And so you're bringing yourself, you know, it's like I always talk about how the window, if you clean the clean window with an oily rag, then don't complain that you can't see the view outside.
That's for sure.
Don't blame the rag. The rag didn't do it on its own. You did it.
Yep.
And unfortunately, this is what we have. We have very toxic people attempting to find enlightenment, attempting to find knowledge, but they're always bringing their own, you know, they're muddying the waters with their own
toxicity.
Hands. This is the problem.
Wow. Well, you know what? Before we get into any more, we're going to take our last break. And this is, again, it's interesting how synchronicity happens. It never ceases to amaze me. But this is the perfect song. And this is Buffy St. Marie and the Big Ones Get Away. Enjoy.